and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. President Trump danced cheek to cheek with the First Lady and promised rapid change at an inaugural ball last night.
We will soon be the greatest we've ever been, and it won't take long.
He didn't waste time implementing what he calls America First policies. Correspondent Jared Hill is in Washington.
The president signed roughly 200 executive orders, rolling back dozens of Biden-era policies in the process, including pulling the U.S. again out of the Paris Climate Agreement. President Trump also offered clemency to all of the nearly 1,500 people charged or convicted in relation to storming the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
We're going to release our great hostages.
Their supporters demonstrated outside a D.C. jail last night.
Mr. Trump also signed an executive order to end birthright citizenship. But University of California, Berkeley law professor Erwin Chemerinsky says there's a problem with that.
In 1897, the Supreme Court held that those who are born in the United States are American citizens, even if their parents were not citizens. Donald Trump can't change that by executive order.
The ACLU has already filed a lawsuit. The Senate got down to business after the inauguration, approving the first of President Trump's cabinet picks.
The nomination of the great Senator Marco Rubio from the state of Florida is confirmed.
Rubio in as Secretary of State. Correspondent Scott McFarland from Capitol Hill.
Marco Rubio, the longtime Florida senator who in 2016 challenged Trump for the Republican nomination for president, has since become a close Trump ally, and he now becomes an early member of the Trump administration and Trump cabinet. It was an overwhelming vote in the Senate, 99-0.
Brutal cold is sweeping the country. Advice on dealing with this morning's 25 below temperature from veterans in Eagle River, Wisconsin.
Stay in the house, also snuggle up as much as possible. Only go out when I absolutely have to.
Bundle up, wear a lot of layers.
A rare winter storm is pounding the Gulf Coast. They're expecting 5 inches of snow in and around Houston. Airports shut down, hundreds of schools closed. A big woohoo for Ohio State. Fans are celebrating after the Buckeyes held off a comeback bid by Notre Dame in last night's college football championship to win their title by a score of 34-23.
I cried. It's always Ohio against the world. And I think today we proved that we are the best team in the country.
S&P futures up 22. Dow futures ahead 142. Bitcoin above 102,000. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
The Bucks head to the Big Easy. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks are headed to New Orleans to play the Pelicans tomorrow night. Tip-off time, 7 o'clock. Milwaukee's won 7 of the last 8 games. After a 4-game home stretch, they now head out with 5 of the next 6 games on the road. In college hoops, the Wisconsin Badgers play UCLA tonight in Los Angeles. Wisconsin now ranked 18th in the nation after beating USC over the weekend. Marquette has dropped in the AP Top 25 from 7th to 10th. Tonight they face Seton Hall. Head coach Shaka Smart on how to help Cameron Jones get going.
I need to spend some time with him and rub his temples because, you know, listen, this Cam Jones, man, this guy's out of this world. But he's also a human being. He's, you know, feeling a lot of pressure, I would imagine. He hasn't verbalized that, and he's been great in practice, and he's been an A-plus teammate. But, man, there's just a lot expected of him on his shoulders. And I think right now when he rises up from outside, he's feeling the weight of some of that.
That's Marquette Shaka Smart with Sports On. Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Well, you know it's a slow holiday weekend at the box office when a movie that was released 5 weeks ago is number one. Mufasa, The Lion King, has been ranked one or two since its release on December 20th. And this past weekend, the film brought in almost $12,000 to lead the way at the domestic box office. Mufasa barely edged out the number two film over the weekend, Sony Pictures' One of Them Days, which reviewed incredibly well and brought in $11.6 million last weekend. The comedy about two girls trying to make rent, starring Kiki Palmer and SZA, is a surprise hit. Wolfman finished in third place in its opening weekend with just under 11 million in mediocre reviews. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 actually moved up a spot from number 5 last week to finish in fourth with about $8.5 million, and it was Den of Thieves 2, which opened at number 1 last week but had a huge drop-off and finished with about $6.5 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be bitterly cold again today. Temperatures will hang in the single digits below zero here all day long, but things will get better. Temperatures are going to rise tonight. A little light snow overnight tonight, and then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with temps climbing back into the upper teens by tomorrow afternoon. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 16 below zero.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, some communities considering getting rid of fluoride. What would this mean for you? Brought to you by Big Cavity. We'll kick it around tomorrow. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a guy who believes a penny saved isn't jack sh**, Pete Schwabe.
Welcome back. On tomorrow night's show, Meet the Parents creator Greg Gliena will be here along with Laura Enright. She's an author who wrote a book called The Meet the Parents Story. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that went into the making of the studio version. Greg made an independent film that was sort of started the franchise. So that'll be an interesting discussion. And the book sounds great. Then herbalist Mason Hutchinson will be here tomorrow night at 7:20. Conrad, he's going to talk about herbs, not herbs.
Okay.
Okay.
Herbs.
Yeah. We could talk about herbs, but there aren't that many of them that I'd like to talk about. Coming up at 7:20, Milwaukee's own, I'm actually talking to Milwaukee's own Tom Clark, but another native son of Milwaukee will be here. Entertainment critic Matt Miller will be here at 7:20. We'll talk award shows and have all sorts of fun. So great to have you with me on this Monday night, a very frigid Monday night in our state. Comedian Tom Clark is here. He is coming back to the Midwest and doing a show at Rounding Third this coming Friday night. You can find tickets at TomClark.com. There are a few tickets left at the moment, or at least at the beginning of this interview, Tom. We don't know what happened since. They could be gone for all we know.
Flying off the show.
Either way, it's great to have you here, buddy. So, Tom, let me ask you this. I don't know if I've asked you this in the past, but you're so funny and so expressive, and you do some acting. When you're doing something in your act or doing a character, do you have acting aspirations, or are you just totally happy doing stand-up?
Oh, I mean, I love to act. I mean, you know, I do have an acting reel on my website. I was in an episode of The Closer on TNT.
Oh, sweet.
I played a murderer, and it was like a guest star role.
Nice. So
it was like the surprise murderer.
Surprise murderer.
Yeah, I did Freaks of Nature. I've had quite a few. It was a movie I acted opposite Dennis Leary. I did another TV show, Fresh Off the Boat, with Constance Wu. My scene was with her. So, and I just shot an independent film that's coming out probably in the next few months, but I shot it in December. So, yeah, I mean, I love acting. That's really why I moved to LA, and it's something I want to keep doing. So I'm looking for an agent right now, but you know, I used to have an agent who would send me out, and now he's with a new agency that they don't want to focus on guys like me. So they want big time actors and stuff. So
that's interesting.
I love it.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just right now I'm just submitting myself for different independent films and stuff. I have a couple of auditions this week that I got to work on. But, you know, I like you, Godfather of Green Bay, you know, that's what I want to do, is either shoot my own movie or shoot my own TV show. And I feel like that's sort of the next step in all this is it's not really going through studios anymore. It's like you just do it yourself and
right.
maybe some one of the streaming sites picks you up and go from there.
Yeah, that's great. I could totally see you doing that. I didn't know you had already acted. I just thought you were so funny last year when I watched. That was the first time I'd ever seen your entire set. And who do people tell you, like, who are your influences, Tom, when it comes to stand-up?
I mean, I'm a huge Steve Martin fan is probably my number one.
Okay.
You know, lately I've got a lot of Norm Macdonald.
Oh, nice.
People say that a lot. I'm a big fan of his, but it never was my intention to be like him. But there's definitely, I think Steve Martin kind of, that's probably one of Norm's influences as well. So, but, you know, Steve Martin, Andy Kaufman,
oh, wow.
You know, those were the guys I really enjoyed growing up.
I don't know if you've heard this. I don't know if you've heard this before, but I saw kind of some Brian Regan, you know, just with how you just act things out. And it's so great. And man, Steve Martin, you know, those are the albums we grew up listening to. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be hearing this or some of what he was saying. You know, he's so funny, but those are great people to have as influences, and Norm Macdonald as well.
Yeah.
Where are you on, well, A, Bob Uecker, Tom, and what did you think when you heard the news of his passing last week as a big-time Brewer fan?
Obviously he lived, I wasn't sad. I mean, he had a very full life,
yeah.
So I thought that was awesome that he did so much. I thought it's sort of funny, like growing up in Wisconsin, we had the sort of this Vince Lombardi element in our lives, which was like, win at all costs and work hard and, you know, no pain, no gain. And then you had Uecker who was just like, yeah, I'm not very good at baseball and, you know, who cares? And I'm making fun of this. And I think that's such a weird dichotomy that you grew up with Bob Uecker being so big and Vince Lombardi. It's like the polar opposites of sports.
Yeah.
And Bob Uecker was more about the fun of it all. And Lombardi was more about the hard work of it all. And I think that's really defines Wisconsin as well.
That's great.
It can be work, but it can be fun. And, you know, growing up at the stadium in 81, when they had the strike, you know, they kind of had a mini spring training because the players had to come back, and their spring training was in Milwaukee at County Stadium. So I remember going down there. I have two autographed baseballs full of Brewers names, Robin Yount, Molitor, Cooper, and Bob Uecker's on there as well. And I, you know, never got to interact much with him, but, you know, that 82 Brewers team, that 80s era is always going to be that lineup I'm always going to remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because they were so iconic. Hopefully they're going to win it. One of these years, they got to win
it. Yeah. Mike Clemens was on the show last Friday, our sports authority here at Civic Media, Tom, and he told great Uecker stories. And one of them was, and I love this, talked about him going on Carson the first time. And Carson was laughing hysterically. Like, and he was like, who is this guy? And whoever got Uecker on the Tonight Show mentioned that he used to play baseball, but he was so funny. After he left the stage, Carson leaned over to someone and said, did that guy really play baseball? Like, and it just made me laugh so hard. Like before anybody knew who he was, you know, what a great, he's just such a unique guy with the sitcoms and the movies and he did it all from Milwaukee. It's incredible, really.
Right. What I think it's like, it's also undersold. Like he was a great baseball player. I mean, nobody becomes a major leaguer without being good at it. Like he wasn't that bad. I mean, there's a lot of 200 hitters now
that right.
made quite a career for themselves. So, I mean, I think that's the other thing is like just the guy to grow up in Milwaukee and to get signed by your hometown team and, you know, and even like that story about him and Bob Gibson holding hands in the team photo.
Oh, great.
You know, I think that goes beyond just like something silly. It was like to hold at that time, a black player's hand in St. Louis and to kind of have this brotherhood, like
right.
There was something deeper there and he didn't make it to be that. But I think, you know, I think it was a statement to be made at that time and good for him. So
yeah.
I just think he's such a great man. And I really hope this year we win it for him.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
Before we let you go, Tom, do you have a favorite sitcom that stars primarily a comedian, like a stand-up turned actor who had his own sitcom? Do you have a favorite in that genre?
I mean, you know, Seinfeld, obviously, I love. I think that's great. I'm trying to think if there's, you know, the weird show that I like is called Peep Show. It's a BBC show. Huh. Two of the funniest guys. It's so cringy. It's almost like Curb Your Enthusiasm. Mitchell and Webb is the comedians. They're sketch comedians, but two of the funniest guys. But Peep Show is definitely one of my top five sitcoms, oh, nice. Along with like Curb and Seinfeld. But yeah, I can't really think of anything where I'm a big Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but those aren't really comics.
What about Larry Sanders? Did you like that show, Gary Shandling's brainchild?
I enjoyed it. I never really watched it as much, but I always liked like the Christopher Guest shows, like Spinal Tap Best in Show. I love those mockumentary type shows, and I never really got to watch Larry Sanders, but I do love sort of that mockumentary style of like this blowhard show business guy who's, you know, and how messed up his life is. I think that's always a great. One thing I'll say is, as one of the first acting jobs I ever got was on a show called Outsourced on NBC, and the director was Ken Kwapis, and Ken directed The Office pilot. He directed Larry Sanders. He directed Duncan Checks In, but he was one of my, he was a great director, and I didn't know at the time when I booked this, and I'm doing the table read. I had one line in the whole show, and after the show, he approached me and he said, "Hey, I'm shooting this movie in Alaska. I have a role for you." And I just thought he was giving out roles to everyone who had done the read through. And it turned out it was just me that he asked, and just on this one line. And I shot this movie called Big Miracle with John Krasinski and Drew Barrymore Alaska for a week. And, you know, so great. I did a scene with John Michael Higgins was my scene. It's on my reel, on my acting reel on my website, but just his belief in me like that really was amazing.
That keeps you going. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he cut me out. Unfortunately, he had to cut me out of the movie. I ended up on the DVD extras, but he was so nice. He called me and said like, "Look, we had to cut you out. Like, it's so funny. Like, the producers love it, but it just doesn't, you know, tie into what we're trying to do." The other guy, mentioning another guy was, I did an episode of Room 104 on HBO, and who are the brothers that have the show? I can't remember their names now. Anyways, they gave me a percent on my residuals, which means they gave me a back end deal where all the actors on the show got 1% of the profit that they made. So I got a random check for like $1,200. Nice. So there's just these really nice, amazing people that I got to work with.
Not all the horror stories are true. There are good people like yourself, like yourself, Tom. Hey, travel safely, have great shows, and hopefully I'll see you this weekend at Marinette. Thank you so much, buddy, for your time as always. So great to hang.
All right. Thank you, Pete.
You Take got care. It. All right. That's Tom Clark. Check him out at Rounding Third this Friday in Milwaukee. When we come back, Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins me here at Nightlight. This is Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hi, I'm Anthony Anderson. For the past 80 years, the United Negro College Fund has helped more than 500,000 students graduate from college and become leaders of our nation. Since its beginning in 1944, UNCF has made one truth known: a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Support UNCF as they continue supporting the dreams and hopes of 50,000 deserving students each year. Please visit uncf.org today. Happy 80th, UNCF.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina,
can you
tell us what you really think?
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
Robotaxis made by Zooks are slated to hit the streets of California later on this year. Rides will initially be free for people who agree to test it out. You go first. Wait,
have you ever wanted to drive in a four-person casket with no driver?
My biggest sticking point about this is the name. Zooks is a cartoon character.
Yeah. Do you think when he's driving, he's going...
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Great text coming in. We will get to some of these in just a bit, but our question of the night is open air stadium or dome? So cold out, folks, and it will be tomorrow too. Can you imagine sitting at a football game right now? That's kind of what sparked the whole thing. And and seeing all those players on the snow, I want to see great athletes on a neutral playing field. But I understand the old-fashioned type too. 818 Bridget says, this is a hard question. I want to say open air, but it just isn't fun to watch football when you're freezing. I kind of feel like Bridget does. We'll get to more of your texts in just a little bit. Right now, it is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight, back to Nightlight, one of our frequent flyers and favorite guests, Matt Miller, Milwaukee film critic, joins us now on the stream. Hey, buddy.
Hey, howdy. Thanks for having me. My apologies in advance if you hear any yelling in the background. Uh-oh. That is my wife watching the Notre Dame-Ohio State game.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We talked a little bit about that last time, and it was 7-0 Notre Dame last I saw. Conrad, do we have a score update or...
Oh, I haven't even checked in on that. I don't like either team, so.
Oh, so you're hoping they both lose.
Yes.
Like most of America, you are rooting for a meteor strike.
Matt, it's great to have you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's an exciting week. We've got the Oscar nominations on Thursday. That'll be very exciting to kind of get this season going and see, you know, where the conversation goes from there. And yeah, very, very exciting if you're a movie fan. And just in general, there's a ton of really good movies out right now, especially if you're in the Milwaukee area. So just an embarrassment of riches if you're a movie fan.
Absolutely. And how about that? How about all the great movies that are in theaters? I'm so behind on the mat. That's why I'm glad when you sent me your list of what you had seen. I was thrilled because three or four of these I meant to see this past weekend and it didn't work out. But why don't we jump in there and then have some award show talk? I would love to hear your thoughts on some of these films. I've heard mostly the good stuff I've heard about Brutalist is amazing. And then there are a couple people I know that just hate it. So where do you stand on the Brutalist?
I like it. For those who don't know, the Brutalist is about 3.5 hour long drama about a Hungarian architect post-World War II comes to America and kind of deals with the difficulty of the American dream, we'll call it. Grandiose movie. I mean, if the Oscars awarded movies based on production, just purely on the ability to produce a movie, The Brutalist would win hands down. It is wild to me a movie this broad, this massive, this wide-reaching was made and was made for only $10 million, which is insane considering, you know, what's involved in that movie. I will say, for a movie that feels desperately like it wants to be the great American novel, I wanted to be more filled at the end of it. I wanted the feeling of like having a good meal and feeling like satisfied on some level. And it didn't quite, I think the second half of the movie, the post intermission chunk, didn't quite work as well for me as the first half.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But for ambition and for performance and for just pure chutzpah on a movie like that, to make a movie like that, it is definitely worth seeing.
I read today that the director and the editor admitted to using AI to perfect some of the accents, the Hungarian accents. And supposedly they did such a good job, even people from Hungary don't know. I'm not for AI when it comes to writing and things that are going to cost people jobs. But I guess this is, I mean, the cat's out of the bag. It's not going anywhere. I can live with this, I think.
And I think we need to, you know, we need to kind of draw comparisons between generative AI and, you know, kind of AI that's been around for years now.
Okay.
And this isn't, you know, entirely generative. Like when it comes to the Hungarian accents and stuff like that, they've talked about how, you know, this was really exclusively Hungarian dialogue, which is, you know, Hungarian, for those who know, is apparently a very difficult language to learn how to speak, much less perform in. And the performances stayed the same. It was just finessing certain like vowel sounds and stuff like that.
Right.
And this technology has been out there. You know, this is not, you know, one of the new things that is taking over jobs or anything. This is kind of more closer to standard post-production from the sounds of things. The other case is apparently for the kind of epilogue in the movie, AI, generative AI was kind of used to create some sample kind of examples of architecture that were in the background of the scene. And then the designers of the movie took those kind of examples and drew and based off of them, which again, doesn't seem as egregious as, you know, using generative AI to entirely craft,
write,
you know,
a script.
Something.
Yeah.
I very much understand why people are very touchy right now about the subject of AI in art and AI in Hollywood and the concerns of something so essentially human and you know, and a job, you know,
yeah,
not only labor, but a human creative, you know, force being turned into computer automation. I totally understand those fears. I totally understand the concerns. I don't think this is one of the more strong cases. This feels, I mean, someone jokingly tweeted the other day, Harvey Weinstein would be proud of this. This feels like a massive, like, Oscar season Swift voting situation. Somebody out there was like, did you know the Brutalist used AI, air quotes around AI, and kind of, you know, trying to deflate the balloon on one of the potential favorites to win Best Picture. So I don't love the fact that AI was used, but I do not think this is an example of it that we need to be, you know, hugely concerned and hugely, you know, demonizing of what the work they did on this film.
Yeah, I agree with you. We have about a minute till the news, Matt, and then we'll dig deeper into some of this stuff. But speaking of Oscar nominations, Best Picture nod in your opinion for Brutalist, and what about Adrian Brody? Will he get a nod?
I think you hear a lot of Brutalist on Thursday morning. Obviously, Best Picture, definitely Best Director. Adrian Brody, for sure, for Best Actor. I think the big question is going to be the supporting roles. Guy Pearce, who's very good as the kind of American industrialist who takes him under his wing, and Felicity Jones, who plays his wife in the movie. It's a significant role, but she doesn't show up until the second half. Oh. And frankly, it's a long movie. If you're an Oscar voter, are you getting to the second half of the movie? Oscar voters can sometimes famously not be as committed to awards season as maybe they should be. So I'll be interested to see if Felicity Jones gets in for Best Supporting Actress, or if, you know, a Selena Gomez gets in for Emilia Perez,
right,
or someone, you know, a kind of flashier name in a flashier movie, like Emilia Perez on Netflix.
Good stuff, Matt. I love Guy Pearce, too. Matt Miller is my guest. He is a Milwaukee-based film critic and entertainment critic, I should say. And we'll have more with Matt after Civic Media's news team keeps you informed. We got Oscar talk coming up. We're going to talk more movies. All the good stuff you want to talk about. Let us know your thoughts, folks, on the text line at 855-752-4842. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thought I was late and I found she wasn't there. I guess I'll find love, peace of mind some other time, but I...
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. Among President Trump's first acts on his first day back in office, pardoning nearly all of the 1,600 January 6th rioters.
These people have been destroyed. What they've done to these people is outrageous. There's rarely been anything like it in history, in the history of our country.
Mr. Trump also moved to end birthright citizenship, but that one may not stick. University of California, Berkeley law professor Erwin Chemerinsky.
The president can't change that by executive order.
The ACLU has already filed a lawsuit. A rare winter storm is dumping snow, sleet, and freezing rain across the South. CBS meteorologist David Parkinson.
In a place like New Orleans, like Mobile, there's just not a lot of parts of that state that actually see snow. And so there's not a lot of assets to move into place there.
Drivers in Amarillo, Texas, hit with whiteout conditions. Hundreds of schools across Texas closed. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks head to the Big Easy. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks are headed to New Orleans to play the Pelicans tomorrow night. Tip-off time, 7 o'clock. Milwaukee's won 7 of the last 8 games. After a 4-game home stretch, they now head out with 5 of the next 6 games on the road. In college hoops, the Wisconsin Badgers play UCLA tonight in Los Angeles. Wisconsin now ranked 18th in the nation after beating USC over the weekend. Marquette has dropped in the AP Top 25 from 7th to 10th. Tonight they face Seton Hall. Head coach Shaka Smart on how to help Cameron Jones get going.
I need to spend some time with him and rub his temples because, you know, listen, this Cam Jones, man, this guy's out of this world. But he's also a human being. He's, you know, feeling a lot of pressure, I would imagine. He hasn't verbalized that, and he's been great in practice, and he's been an A-plus teammate. But, man, there's just a lot expected of him on his shoulders. And I think right now when he rises up from outside, he's feeling the weight of some of that.
That's Marquette Shaka Smart with Sports On. Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Comedian Dave Chappelle has made a living being funny and controversial, which is tough to do. On last weekend's Saturday Night Live, the comedian said he was tired of being controversial. During his fourth time hosting the show, Chappelle wished new President Trump good luck, joked about the LA fires, and at one point said he was never invited to a Diddy party, adding that that is a hard way to find out you're ugly. He might be tired of being controversial, but it will be interesting to see if he can avoid those urges over the next 4 years. Awards season is heating up, even for the less known award events. Saudi Arabia's Joy Awards took place over the weekend and had some serious star power in attendance. Morgan Freeman was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award, which was presented by Anthony Hopkins. Matthew McConaughey was given the award for Best Personality, which is really impressive given that he makes the absolute worst commercials. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be bitterly cold again today. Temperatures will hang in the single digits below zero here all day long, but things will get better. Temperatures are going to rise tonight. A little light snow overnight tonight, and then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with temps climbing back into the upper teens by tomorrow afternoon. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 16 below zero.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Pete Hegseth, confirmation hearing.
I've never disparaged women serving in the military.
Except for, you know, the podcast interview in like late November of 2024 when he said women in combat weaken the military. Except for that, Pete, did you get body snatched? Are you not the same guy that sat down in the Brosphere podcast?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Mike Siegel. Hey, Mike.
When I look back on all those years on the road and going on two-lane highways in northern Wisconsin in the dead of winter, it could have been like 10 below outside. One deer jumps out in front of me. I was like, I'm done here.
You're in a ditch and they're not going to find you for 3 days. Dead deer carcass over there and a dead comedian carcass.
Holding his date book.
Somebody might want to call and cancel him at Zany's next week in Chicago.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I'm joined by author of The Meet the Parents Story, Laura Enright, and Meet the Parents creator, Greg Liana. Then herbalist Mason Hutchinson joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
the text line, Tom from the 414, he's in New Berlin, says, pumper music, great. I think he means bumper. It's pumper music.
I want you to go through this whole text without stopping. Just trying to read it.
I was kind of deciphering it through the break. Bumper music, great, but a tease. Want to hear more? Yes. I don't know if he means the band or plus can't get the freaking game ESPN. Yeah, ESPN is brutal when it comes to streaming. All right, we'll read more of your texts. Dome or open air stadium? That's tonight's question. Let us know on the stream or old fashioned text or, on the app. It all works. We are talking with Matt Miller. He is the entertainment critic extraordinaire from Milwaukee. He joins us now. We're talking award shows and films. We just finished with The Brutalist. Matt, what did you think of Den of Thieves 2?
I had a really fun time.
Oh, nice.
Den of Thieves 2. And I'm saying that as somebody who's not a huge fan of the original Den of Thieves. It's Meathead Heat. And if I wanted to watch Heat, I'd watch Heat, you know?
Right.
I found that movie kind of a slog. And then this new one comes out, and it does feel like this one has a better sense of the tone. It's a little bit more light in its step. It's emotional core. It focuses in on two more interesting characters rather than kind of these super stock cliche tough guy types.
Oh yeah,
not that they're not brutal. Tough guy types in Den of Thieves 2, but they're just doing some more interesting things. And I think if you're a fan of classic heist movies, if you like stuff like Rafifi and stuff like that, I think you're going to have a lot of fun with Den of Thieves 2. I was hoping this would kind of be a kind of surprise January breakout sequel hit, and that hasn't turned out to be the case thus far. But if you're on the fence, I had a really good time with it. I think it's a really solid January heist movie.
It's a pretty big drop off from week one, but you're right. And it reviewed fairly well, better than the first one. The first one, Matt, I don't know if you remember this, when they were all stuck on the off ramp. They were chasing the thieves.
Yeah, the big action set piece, essentially.
Yeah, yes. And my issue with that was that they would never do that. They wouldn't, they have money, and I know that they killed, I think, a security guard or whatever, if I remember correctly, but they pulled their guns out and started a firefight with 100 cars between them, and I'm like, that took me out of the whole movie. I'm like, sorry, this is just dumb now. And so, yeah, it was just kind of I don't know what you just said about Heat, but Meatball Heat or whatever, but I will see the second one because it's reviewing even better than the first one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think they hone in better on Gerard Butler and O'Shea Jackson Jr. I think that relationship works much better as the core as opposed to kind of the kind of a collage of characters they have in the first one. Most of them are not very interesting at all.
Right.
And it's just so like, all right, cops and criminals. What if they both are brotherhoods of different kinds? I'm like, I know. I've seen this movie before. He came out 30 years ago.
Right,
So this one, and again, not like this one is breaking new ground, but I think it's doing it with a lighter touch. And I think the big heist set piece is just really tense and exciting and well done. So again, it's January. If you don't want to see like, you know, the very intense, dense dramas and Oscar movies out there, I think Den of Thieves 2 is a really strong way to go.
All right, I'm really annoyed with myself because Nosferatu has been on my list for 3 weekends running now. And
fix that. Fix that.
I'm trying, Matt. I'm doing my best. I had to take my daughter back to school and all kinds of stuff. I always have excuses.
Family schmamily.
Ah, exactly. I'll tell my wife you said so. What did you think of it? It's reviewing well, and I'm very excited to see it. Billy Skarsgård, come on.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Nosferatu. I think it is. I love the just nightmarish, inky, just Robert Eggers just is so good at building worlds. And I mean, he did that with The Witch. He did that with The Lighthouse.
Lighthouse,
he did that with
right.
The Northman. And he does it again here. And I think his commitment to the bit, and it's just a gorgeous movie. There's a whole sequence when Nicholas Holt's character arrives at Nosferatu's castle that is just perfect nightmare, eerie logic. It just crawls under your skin. I really dig that movie. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. I think Johnny Depp's daughter is really, really good in the movie, too.
Okay.
I've never been too impressed with her before this. I kind of thought she was just kind of a classic you know, nepotism situation.
Nepo baby, yeah.
Yeah, but she really kind of channels some really interesting Linda Blair level performance stuff here. And I, you know, we've seen enough exorcism movies now that you'd think that a lot of those tricks have gotten old at this time. But I think she really, really does some really impressive physical work in this performance.
All right, two I want to get to before we switch to full-blown Oscar noms and award shows. And I'll probably ask you about David Lynch too, but Better Man. When that first came out, I'm reading about this and I'm like, well, this is going to be a bomb. This is crazy. A monkey. What are they doing? Like, are they out of ideas? Whatever. And it's a, like, critics love it.
It's very weird. It did bomb. Unsurprisingly, yeah. A biopic about a musician nobody really knows in America, played by a CGI ape, not playing all that great.
Yeah.
I get why people are really high on this movie, Better Man. It's a biopic about Robbie Williams, who's a big UK pop star. I know him from being traumatized by the Rock DJ music video back in the early 2000s. Mm. Don't watch it. It's terrifying.
Rock. What's it called? Now I have to.
The music video is called Rock DJ, and 10-year-old Matt was scarred for life watching that one. But yeah, and I appreciate what people see in this biopic. If you think A Complete Unknown is too traditional and too kind of cliche, Better Man is the opposite of that. It has taken some huge swings. It is unapologetic in the fact that its lead performer is kind of a scumbag and kind of, you know, not all that great.
A sex addicted, cocaine addicted monkey.
You truly, while you're watching the movie, there are certain points where you're like looking around and you're like, did I just walk into an alternate dimension where this all makes sense?
Right.
And especially that it's just weird to watch a movie where a guy is like, oh, fame, man, it really gets to you and all that stuff. And you're sitting there and you're like, I don't know who you are. You are not right. as famous as you think you are. And I think at about 2.5 hours, it kind of gets old hearing this guy be like, oh, I'm just... life is so hard. It just gets a little exhausting. But I get why people like it. It's very showily directed. It's from the director of The Greatest Showman. Another movie that was a bad idea, a P.T. Barnum musical in the year 2018, sounded like a really bad idea. It turned out to be a hit and B, a lot better than it had any right to be. And he brings a lot of energy to the movie. I got tired of it after a while, but I appreciate what it's going for.
Yeah, you don't mind. You're more forgiving when you see someone really taking a chance. I applaud the effort, but I haven't seen it, especially
in this day and age of Hollywood where you know, everything is so, you know, brand based and IP based and sanded down beyond your wildest beliefs. When you see something that is objectively kind of a bad decision or a huge swing, you kind of appreciate it. Yeah. You know, is a movie like Den of Thieves 2 great? No, but is it nice to see a heist movie made for adults in the year 2025? It really is. And, you know, I'd love for that bar to not be that low anymore where it's like, wow, it's not, you know, a generic Hollywood blockbuster. But that's where things are right now.
Right. All right. Last one. The Last Showgirl. Who would have thought Pamela Anderson, star of Baywatch, and I haven't seen it yet, but she's getting a lot of really good reviews for her performance in the film, as is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, that one I'm confused by. Jamie Lee Curtis is, I would argue, really bad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I like The Last Showgirl. I think the movie's really good. It's kind of a lovely ode to people who love an industry that doesn't love them back and to kind of an old passé version of glamour. I really connected with that. And I think Pamela Anderson, I think it's a good performance. I think it's a kind of Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler situation where it's kind of a perfect combination of performer and role. I don't know if Pamela Anderson has a bunch of, you know, I don't know if she's going to have this late career resurrection in terms of being a great actress, but I think this is a case of a great performance.
Okay.
But the Jamie Lee Curtis thing boggles me. And sometimes there's these performers who they just land in the Academy's pocket and they just, like Meryl Streep had that, where Meryl Streep, you know, she just showed up and got an Oscar nomination or a win in the case of The Iron Lady. And Judi Dench had that. And, you know, there's just certain actors that the Academy just kind of falls in love with for a few years.
Right.
And Jamie Lee Curtis is in that place right now. And this is going back to, like, I think she's a great actress. I'm glad that she has an Oscar. But she wasn't even the best supporting actress in everywhere, everything, everywhere, all at once.
Oh, wow.
You know, and yeah. she wasn't even the best supporting actress in her movie, much less the best supporting actress of that year. And now it's looking like she might get nominated for this performance in The Last Showgirl, which is just, it's in the wrong movie. Everyone else is playing pretty natural and pretty down to earth, and she is just blowing the movie out of the water. And I mean, congratulations to Bronzer for its best supporting actress nomination on Thursday, if she does end up getting the win. But it is definitely a case of most acting versus best acting.
Oh, interesting. My guest is Matt Miller. He is a Milwaukee-based entertainment critic. You can check out his work at A Man About Film at his Substack. Great stuff. Matt, any predictions for the Oscar nominations, as we mentioned before, that are happening this week? Will it mirror? I saw a great stat, and it was, I think it was the Screen Actors Guild, that the best ensemble cast in the last 30 years, the film that has won for best ensemble cast has won the Best Picture Oscar all but four times. Fascinating statistic. Will we see any crossover with award shows?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of the familiar names you've heard so far. Amelia Perez, Wicked, Conclave, The Brutalist, Anora. I think you're going to see a complete unknown, especially for Best Picture. I think you're going to see Monica Barbaro, who plays Joan Baez in the movie, getting in, along with Edward Norton and Timothy Chalamet. I think, crazily enough, I think Substance is going to get a ton of nominations. It is a movie that people have been really passionate about and have really connected to. And in a year like this, where there's no obvious frontrunner, there's no Oppenheimer, and there's no Everything Everywhere All at Once, a movie that people are passionate about can score a lot of nominations. So I think you're going to see Demi Moore nominated. I think you're going to see it get nominated for Best Director for Coralie Fargeau. And I think you're going to see it get nominated for Best Picture, which is insane. If you have seen that movie, it is the bonkerest movie that will ever get a Best Picture nomination, especially considering what happens in the final third of it. And I love that, A, because I think the movie's good, and B, if the Academy can keep opening up to other genres. I mean, we had a foreign language film win Best Picture with Parasite just five years ago. If we can get a horror movie to be considered, you know, a Best Picture candidate on the regular, instead of that being kind of a freak occurrence, if we can get, you know, a documentary would be great to see in the Best Picture lineup one of these years, because we still haven't seen that. You know, if we can start welcoming other genres into the Best Picture and into the Oscar nominee fold, then the Oscars just get more interesting. And
absolutely.
I think, especially if the Oscars want to be more relevant and more watched by people, bringing more movies to the fold is a great way to do that, instead of, you know, just dramas and just very actory things. There's a place for comedy. There's a place for horror. There's a place for documentary and animation. And hopefully we see some of that variety with the nominations this year.
So very well said, Matt. And I think it's weird with Demi Moore. All I've heard a lot of buzz about her performance. And then I'm watching the show Landman, and she's in the first season as John Hamm's wife. John Hamm is underused. Demi Moore has 20 minutes of screen time the whole season. It's like she did it for the benefits or something, or to get her SAG benefits, and now she's Oscar nominated. It's crazy.
I think that's a case where they probably filmed a lot of Landman before The Substance came out and before The Substance was really on people's radar.
Yeah, probably.
And now that that's blown up, and now that she's kind of, you know, reawoken into the public mindset, they were like, well, we should, you know, push her being in this movie and or in this TV show, and there's just not that much of her in it. You see that a lot with Oscars and things like that, where a movie that's sat on the shelf for a long time gets finally released after the Oscars, after a big win, and it's because, you know, somebody has a supporting role. I think there's one, Like Crazy was an indie movie from several years ago that got big buzz because Jennifer Lawrence was a supporting character in that movie, and that was during the kind of Winter's Bone, Hunger Games era of her kind of eruption to fame. And you saw the movie and you're like, oh, she's in the movie for like 20 minutes, you know?
Right.
So there's always the kind of movies like that trying to capitalize on these stars having a moment.
Matt, we didn't get to David Lynch. Can you stick around for a very quick break and then we'll come back? I'd love to hear your thoughts on his career before we let you go.
Absolutely.
Okay, Matt Miller is here. We're going to get his thoughts on David Lynch's passing last week. And we'll read some of your text to close this thing down. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Where she danced around the barroom and she did the hoochie-coo. Yeah, she sang her song all night long.
telling me what to do. Blow up your TV, throw away your paper, go to the country, build you a home.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New presidents often use day one executive orders to move their policy agendas forward. What are the different kinds of presidential orders? What are their limitations? And why do presidents use them? Since John F. Kennedy, presidents have averaged 269 executive orders over their terms. Since 1907, each order receives a number and all are cataloged at the National Archives. There are three different kinds of orders, according to Dr. Bert Rockman of Purdue University. Executive orders are written orders, usually on more weighty issues such as national emergencies or setting uniform policy for government action. Written presidential memoranda authorize or freeze projects, share official positions with Congress, outline treaties in international affairs, and other policy matters. Memoranda are not required to be published or public. A third type are proclamations, such as a proclamation celebrating Juneteenth. Pardons and clemency are not executive orders, but rather a separate power granted by the Constitution. Gridlock resulting from the failure of Congress to compromise on legislation often stimulates presidents to use more executive orders as presidents struggle to move their policies forward. But executive orders can also be blocked by Congress or court review, as President Trump found out in his first term Muslim ban. Find more in the history of presidential orders at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Badgers.
Seats Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Play.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts at a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Steve in the 920 says, Grandma Krieger, that's Conrad's grandma, and I are having... I think having a dome stadium makes it unfair to football stadiums that don't. You wonder if the LA Rams or Baltimore Ravens might have won if they would have played in a dome stadium without snow or cold conditions. That is the argument, Steve, for sure. Or Grandma Krieger, I should say. I love that your grandma has an opinion on that, Conrad. I think that's kind of cool. And we have a text from Steady Eddie we will get to in just a bit. 715 Joe says, I like a dome. Better for fan attendance. I'm with you. I've become a total wimp in my... later years, Joe. Give me a dome anytime. We have a couple more minutes here with Matt Miller. He's an entertainment critic from Milwaukee. Check out his work at Matt Miller or at A Man About Film on his Substack. Matt, your thoughts on David Lynch's passing, and were you a fan of his work?
It's a massive loss to start with that, obviously. I will say I was born, Twin Peaks was before my time, obviously not the third and final season. So I don't quite have the connection to him that a lot of people did who grew up with him, who kind of had that in their DNA, but it's a massive loss. And he's one of those figures who, when he passed away, no one had a bad thing to say about him.
Yeah.
You know, everyone just loved. And I think what's really deeply stressful between him passing and Bob Uecker the same day,
right,
is these people who are such personalities and went with such joy and such creativity into what they did. And you just don't see a lot of people picking up the torch of what they were doing. And a lot of that is because the environment we're in right now, like a movie like Eraserhead really struggles to break through. Right. You know, who is the new David Lynch? Who are the people who are able to carry on David Lynch's, you know, creativity and off-kilter view of the world and experimental approach to capturing a story? Where are the people carrying that torch? There are a few people out there. There are a few directors and a few movies out there that you can see that, you know, have a little bit of that. But for someone like David Lynch, who is just unfettered and
yeah,
would make and could make something like The Straight Story, which is, you know, in David Lynch's, you know, filmography, such an oddball, this quiet, reflective movie with no surreality about it, but very real.
Yeah.
And still just tell a beautiful story with it. I think he was one of our great filmmakers, one of our great creative minds of cinema, and someone who, even if you didn't like his movies, I don't love Inland Empire, but I love that it makes my brain twist into knots trying to think about what he's going at.
Yeah.
And even if you don't like what you're looking at, you're not going to forget what you're looking at. And I think there aren't many people willing to take those massive swings the way David Lynch would.
With humbleness and
with a humbleness to taking these swings and not being like, I'm the most artistic man
right
who ever lived, you know, not, you know, somebody who did stuff because he was like, I have a vision in my head and I just want to share it with people. And that's what David Lynch did.
Very well said, Matt. And he was an artist before he made films, so he had that definite mentality. He just wanted to make what he wanted to make, and it was art and it was beautiful. And
What was the quote that was going around where it was like he wanted his paintings to move? And that was,
great.
You see that with, you know, his movies. You see that with the cinema he made, where a lot of it is kind of almost painting like, where it's you looking at the screen and kind of having to interpret and having to kind of puzzle together and you know, feel what he's creating rather than being told what he's creating. And he was one of a kind.
And it's so great because I try not to pay attention to shots or sound, or you just want to be all encompassed in the film. But since he passed away, I went back and watched the first episode of Twin Peaks, which is like 2 hours long. And I'm looking at the shots and they're stunning. I mean, a huge loss. And great words, buddy. Hey, thanks so much, Matt. Tonight we'll have to keep we'll keep in touch through awards season and figure this thing out. Really appreciate
your time.
Absolutely.
And I do want to say, if you are a Lynch fan out there and you're in the Milwaukee area, I believe X-Ray Arcade on Wednesday night, I believe it is, they're going to be showing the pilot of Twin Peaks as a tribute there.
Oh, fun.
Complete with the advertisement break. So even if, you know, it wasn't a, you know, a kind of memoriam to David Lynch, it's just kind of a cool experience to kind of go back in time and witness that first episode as it was
with a group.
So that's a really cool event. You can probably read more about that at xrayarcade.com.
Fantastic. Great stuff, buddy. We'll talk soon. Appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Always.
Check on the damage of Notre Dame.
Yeah, go calm your wife down. All right, that's Matt Miller. Check out his work at A Man About Film on his Substack. Let's close it out with a Steady Eddie, shall we, Conrad?
Oh, so I nodded.
Yeah,
it's
kind of a verbal medium radio.
Well, yes, I'm ready for Steady Eddie.
All right, me too. Always ready for Steady Eddie. Steady Eddie says, Pete, as a kid playing football in the snow with friends was so much fun. Like you, Pete, I'm getting soft in my old age, and I don't like the snow and cold, and I don't want to be at a cold, snowy, open-air game. But it was fun to watch the magical snow globe NFL games on TV from my heated recliner with a cold drink in my hand. Steady Eddie. I'm with you, Steady Eddie. He says, P.S. Pete, you and Conrad are lighting it up tonight in all caps, Conrad. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah.
He says, playing complimentary radio in all three facets of the broadcasting game. Offensive comments, defensive replies, and special guests. That is beautiful.
That's great.
That is a well-concocted. You know, sometimes Steady Eddie's texts come in a little later because I think he's working on them the whole show. You can tell there's a lot of thought going in there. Love it. Thank you, Steady Eddie. Great stuff, buddy. Thank you to all the texters tonight. That was a fun question, and you guys crushed it, as always. I'd like to thank my guests, Milwaukee's own Tom Clark. Check out his show at Rounding Third this weekend. You can see if there are still tickets available at TomClarkComedy.com. And Matt Miller, as always, check out his work at A Man About Film on his Substack. Great stuff. We have a great show tomorrow night, as I mentioned earlier. We will have Laura Enright, author Laura Enright, who wrote the Meet the Parents story, and Meet the Parents director Greg Liana will be here. And then we'll talk to herbalist Mason Hutchinson. So great to have you with me. It was great tonight, Light, on a frigid Monday. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, I'm Pete Schwabe. Good night, Wisconsin.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Our friend Luke Mathers is in with another edition of What's Grinding His Gears, and we'll take a look at what's worse, grocery or clothes shopping. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever they made like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Straight. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. President Trump and the First Lady danced cheek to cheek at an inaugural ball last night. He got down to business on his first day back in office, signing a slew of executive actions.
The golden age of America begins right now.
Mr. Trump issued blanket pardons for almost all of the 1,600 Capitol rioters.
Our great hostages that didn't do, for the most part, they didn't do stuff wrong.
Correspondent Scott McFarlane.
A crowd formed at the Washington, D.C. jail Monday night in anticipation there would be some prisoners released from January 6th. There are only a handful of them held there, but there are dozens incarcerated in federal lockups from Texas to Louisiana to Michigan.
President Trump also wants to get people back to the office. CBS's Matt Piper.
President Trump signed a requirement that federal workers return to full-time in-person work immediately. A free